Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of ATL Alts. This is your host, Andre Sandate. Thank you for joining us today. I am delighted to be joined today by two guests, Jason Krause, the founder and CEO, and Chris Duby, the chief strategy officer of an accelerator and global startup community based out of the Boston area called Prepare for VC. Jason and Chris, welcome to ATL Alts.
Great to be here. Yeah, thanks for having us on.
I'd like to get a little bit of background on my guests before we dive into all the things happening at Prepare for VC and the Oasis, the community that you're building. I always like to ask folks to give some background on where they're from and how they got started in the space. You can go back as far as you want, or you can tell me what you had for breakfast this morning, but you know, the idea here is the backstory, you know, behind the numbers. So I'll let you start, Jason.
Sure. The real story behind Prepare for VC is, you know, I've been involved in several ventures, everything from a founder and co-founder role, started a mobile app in college onto a couple startups in the fintech space around the crowdfunding ecosystem. And then, you know, I joined in the angel and venture pathway, been a part of some local angel groups around the Boston area, like the Boston Harbor Angels and a few early stage venture funds. And, you know, in that space, the initial reasoning behind, you know, seeing the opportunity for Prepare for VC was that there were so many great founders out there that just felt were like going through the cracks and, you know, not being picked up by venture funds and investors, because they just had, you know, one small thing in their pitch that didn't really tell their story. And, there's, you know, had been on the investor side, saw most of the pipelines look like thousands of startups coming in every year for a fraction of that. Less than 2% of startups ever get any venture funding, and really wanted to change that, help those great startup founders really tell their story and pitch from the investor's perspective. And then, you know, it's expanded. We started on more of a consulting basis, more, you know, one-on-one services, really focused on the fundraising component. And then I've expanded as we've grown our team, bringing in other experts, serial entrepreneurs, coaches, and business leaders to really bring more of a holistic approach to the startup process, going from, you know, our cohort programs and accelerator offerings to our community platform and, a bunch of other resources to really help go from the stage you come in on to the next level in your startup. So yeah, excited to share the rest of our story here. And great to have, you know, Chris and I on today. Chris is our chief strategy officer. If you want to, you know, share a little bit of your background, great story there as well. So I'll pass it over.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. My name is Christopher Duby. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I come from an entrepreneurial family, former professional athlete. And when I got hurt in my sport, I didn't really have any real experience working in the working world. I was 21, had left school to play professional beach volleyball in Southern California. And so I just started a business, originally from Maine, the state of Maine. And so Maine's known for their lobster. So I started selling live Maine lobsters to the people of Southern California, wholesale and retail. And I met a colleague, and we created an app that allowed for a subscription model with our network, our logistical network, to get them the best price in the country within 24 hours, whatever amount of lobster they needed. So a lot of my clients threw parties on boats the size of yachts and had 25-foot speedboats as their dinghy. So it was pretty fortunate. I was in the right place at the right time and just got lucky. I was able to exit from that and then proceeded to start another couple ventures and realized that, it's really not this easy. There's gargantuan failure in there that you meet along the way, and came back east and threw myself into the corporate world for about 15 years because I needed to learn what it is that I thought I knew and really didn't, what it is that I didn't know and I had no idea about, and strengthen the stuff that I was already okay at, which was the communication and people aspect. And then started my fourth venture, which was a consulting company around executive performance coaching, teaching leaders how to use social cognitive dynamics, communication, negotiation, and influencing for their internal workforce and their markets. Through that, met Jason, and that was a couple of years ago, and worked on some consulting projects. Long story short, here we are a couple of years later and growing a global community that's really aimed at progressing purposeful prosperity for startups all around the world and having these really critical resources that all of them need at an early stage in one centralized hub.
Terrific background and intro. I appreciate you both sharing that. When we met a couple of, I guess it's probably a couple of months ago, Jason and Chris, I was able to participate in one of your demo days for one of the cohorts, and I was definitely impressed by a couple of things. One, the diversity of the class, was really, really inspiring to see in real life, right? We hear a lot about how the venture industry has historically been, more insular. It's changing. We're seeing a lot more first-time funds and startup funds from, non-traditional founders, minorities, women, which is great. But I actually saw this class, unfortunately not in person, but just, through the web presentations they gave. And so I thought that was great. Number two, the diversity of businesses was really, really neat and unique to hear. And then third, just to see, companies that were at the, that accelerator kind of stage where you're focused, to have them validate what you guys are doing at Prepare for VC in terms of the coaching and the mentoring and the preparation. They're by no means like done, right? They're ready to continue to implement the feedback that a lot of them heard that day. So I want to start there with Prepare for VC, the name itself. Tell me, Jason and Chris, in our audience, which is a mix of people that will one day hopefully start their own company or thinking about starting a company. Maybe they have their own fund today and they're looking for, the next great entrepreneur to back. What went into building Prepare for VC and the name? Does it say it all, or is there more to it in terms of your accelerator?
Sure. I'll start here. The name really came from having that background on the venture side, being part of a few different funds and angel groups and wanting to take that perspective and help the entrepreneurs navigate first getting ready for all the steps it takes to go out for a fundraising round and then how to use that and scale beyond that stage. Where it still ties into our newer initiatives and accelerator programs is helping founders have a framework of if you're getting, it's a 16-week, about 4-month program. If your goal is to raise a pre-seed or seed stage round at the end of that time period, what are all the steps you need to take internally to continue growing, validating your business, talking with the right customers, the right partners, other, internal operations in the meantime, honing some of those leadership skills along the way and being ready when you go out and do that final demo day presentation you were at, being ready to tell your story effectively, get people excited. And, one of the things we stress in the program is there's a lot of roles you're involved in as the startup founder and CEO. So, you know, the main thread between all of them is really that excitement factor. Whenever you pitch, you're building excitement from investors, you're building excitement from other team members that are going to join and, you know, take the risk of joining an early stage startup. You're building excitement from customers and really putting that as a theme throughout our program on how you get your vision out there and get other people excited about building that with you and for you.
I mean, Jason hit the center of the target there. I think one of the key differentiators, there's a big difference between wanting to raise money and actually raising money. And when it comes to an idea, everyone has about 1,000 ideas a minute, every minute of every day. So get in line. So really, I think you said it, Andreas, which is we look at a lot of things, but really when it comes down to it, it's what are the people that are behind the idea and the project and the venture? What are they capable of? What are they made of? How do we help them? Because that factor of, as Jason would put it, how do we know that we can look at a bunch of different ideas and which idea is going to be potentially successful? It's the people behind the idea. Always bet on the jockey, not on the horse. Right, Jason? And so when you take that approach, we differentiate ourselves with, we want to prepare you for what that's like, because you think you know, but you have no idea. And unless you've been through it several times, and our team has, and the people we work with and our partners have, it's daunting. And it tests you in a whole bunch of ways. You have to know perspectives and utilize past experience in order to sort of help you navigate what's going on. And then you have to execute and deliver in that place and time, basically by knowing the people that you're talking to, what it is that drives them, how their perspective affects the way they're thinking about this, and leveraging those things to your advantage. Really, I think that's what we're really good at.
And when you set up the program, Prepare for VC, maybe you can talk about what does a cohort look like? How long is the program? What are the stages of the companies and their founders that are applying? Are they pre-revenue, pre-product, or do they have a product and they're, you know, just starting to get some traction? Maybe you can just characterize it, because there are lots of different accelerators and incubators and platforms out there. That was one of the reasons that I invited, you know, Jason, you and Chris on the show, is that as somebody that was newer to venture, you know, one of the first things I noticed comparing it to other asset classes like real estate or private equity, to just pick two, there isn't this ecosystem where a founder who has a business idea, you know, would even be able to literally go and apply for, you know, any number of accelerators, maybe in their backyard if they're in a major city, or that's run in partnership with local companies or local universities. And I think that's great, because a lot of times companies, you know, that are early stage, before they get angel money or their pre-seed money, it's really just an idea. So I was curious to ask you to come on, because I wanted to learn about, when setting up an accelerator or setting up an incubator program, like what went through your all's minds? What were some of the things that you were trying to solve for?
Sure. Yeah. So I think, you know, one of the things, every cohort we have, we do an exit interview individually with each of the startups by the end of it. And one of the consistent themes there is there's a big value from just having that cohort alongside you that's going through the same problems, the same ups and downs at the same time as you are. You know, being able to have a trusted network like of the same 6 to 10 companies on board that can share what's working well, what's not going well in their business, and get advice from each other. So the cohort model was something, we wanted to prove out, and it's been validated through our first three cohorts we've run, that's something that's really important to all of the founders, and having a group of people that are not only looking for that active feedback, but looking for providing feedback and advice to the other startups that go through with them. It's definitely something that's been a strong component of our space here. Some of the other sides have been, they're far in terms of stage, they're far enough along that the goal with all of them is by the end of the 4-month program, they're going to be ready for that first pre-seed or seed stage investment round. They might have raised some friends and family or angel investment or, crowdfunding, but not all of them have raised anything. In terms of how far along they are, it's generally there's something proven out enough on the traction side that they can set those goals and milestones of what they want to do within the first 4 weeks of the program, what they want to keep track of, and, have us work with them on validating throughout every phase of the program from there. They're all tech enabled startups, but that's ranged from the energy space to a fashion e-commerce brand and everything in between. So, pretty broad focused. We're looking into some specialty cohorts as well, more targeted themes, but we've also gotten some feedback from the startups in our program that, like, going in, they wouldn't have expected to learn so much from other companies that were, in completely different sectors, and they found that as a pretty valuable aspect of their program as well. Chris, turn it over to you here.
Yeah, so we'll make a sandwich with what Jason just gave us for the meat aspect of us and the program and our people. So the 30,000 foot view, so we go a little bit above from a strategic perspective, which is my job. If we were to take a scale of 1 through 10, and those numbers mean nothing other than progression. So phase 1, phase 2, phase 3, all the way to phase 10. Phase 10 is, or phase 9 and phase 10 are late stage accelerators like Techstars or Y Combinator or even institutional venture capital funding. And the ones, twos, threes, and fours are idea stage, still validating the idea, still trying to figure out product market fit, trying to figure out a go-to-market strategy. Are we the best team? Do we have a team to do these things? And how are we unfairly positioned with what we have with our team and our concept and not everything else to be the best bet? So you have the ones, twos, threes, and fours. They're more idea stage. The nines and tens are late stage and institutional funding. And then prepare for VC is looking for the companies that are 5, 6, 7, and 8. And we see that as not only the biggest market of entrepreneurs that have maybe made a couple pivots. They're looking for something very specific. And the way that we positioned it is other accelerators will take bits and pieces from what we've seen along the way. Your cap table gets affected and there's questions that don't need to be asked that need to be asked because of situations and the way those relationships play out. So we don't do that. We are zero equity. You pay to be in our program. You join the community for free and access a lot of free material, organic material from champions that we've vetted and curated all across the planet. And then there are paid programs that allow for premium experience, premium access. And so the program itself, like I had said a little bit before, we're looking for very specific things, but it's not specific to a sector or a region of the world. We're looking for specific people, at the right place, at the right time. So that's the high level, we'll call it the top part of the bun. Then Jason laid out the main part of the burger, and then the bottom piece for me is when they're leaving the program after 16 weeks, 32 sessions, a lot of hours. They're leaving in most cases, according to what our data has shown and what they've offered for testimonials, no less than a minimum of 100% growth adjustment scale. So that could mean a whole bunch of different things. But essentially, the reasons why we're getting feedback like that is because our program doesn't just focus on the business. We focus on the people behind the business that progress it to a place that you're saying to investors, no one else can progress it. So before they come in, we give them an assessment. We offer an optional personality test. And then from those things, we pressure test what it is they say they are. You have to show us that you are this. And if you're not, then are you coachable enough in order to have the ability to be taught self-efficacy, realize what your strengths are, realize what your challenges are, and then have the fortitude and resilience and grit it takes to be successful to fill in the gaps. And that's what the second phase of the program is before you get into your first demo day. Then we do some more adjustment, get into the financials, use tools and experts from all over the place in order to help that become really clear really fast. And then it all gears up towards the end where they have an accredited investor demo day. And then they have an exit assessment and an exit interview. And so when they're leaving with newly formed social intelligence skills like communication, negotiation, social dynamics around new innovation adoption. They're leaving with an ability to hone tools in their financial space with partners that we've curated that will give them access to those things. But really what they're leaving with is a portfolio of progress, tangible progress that they've made of 100%+ in 4 months so that they can go to that investor meeting or to that potential advisor and say, whatever question you have will be answered with this. And it just continues the acceleration process. It isn't momentary. It has to be perpetual. So we want to make that happen.
One of the founders that I met at your demo day was formerly a mentor, formerly an advisor through your program, pretty experienced individual. I'm going to ask you, Jason and Chris, about the founders. Again, coming from my perspective, newer to the startup and newer to the venture and tech enabled space, and the folks I've been exposed to, they're not always under a certain age, but they tend to skew to the younger side, the first third of their career, maybe leaving the first third to the middle third. But one of the things I wanted to ask you is, Chris, you talked about the development of the leadership skills and your background in coaching and consulting and individuals. I had another guest on my show who talked about, if you look at the statistics of founders, some of them suffer from mental health. There's a stigma about talking about some of these things in our industry, in our business. So I want to ask you, as you are interviewing candidates for Prepare for VC and you think about that first third of the program, do you find that many of the candidates are coachable, and do you find that in that period of time, there is enough time for them to, start to get that feedback and start to make those improvements, or do they just not perhaps get that invite because there's some, something identified where they just might take a spot, an important spot over 16 weeks from another more deserving candidate who maybe is you know, open to the feedback and open
you
to,
you want to start?
You know, that growth that they're clearly going to get, the data shows from your program. Either of you can address that.
I'll give, as an answer, I'll give an example. So there was a demo day that we had a founder who, in the beginning, we felt good about, coachable. But what we didn't realize is that when put under pressure in some instances, had the ability to be more defensive about their idea because this was their first time around. This is their first startup. Great idea, great guy, very knowledgeable, technical founder, and was challenged. Was given a coachable moment live and was challenged on the spot and diverted to this MO of defensibility of the idea. And so there was some friction there in front of a whole bunch of people, which is to be expected. We're all humans. But what I can tell you is if that founder was not what we had thought them to be in our initial discovery and interview process, they would have not come to that next meeting, the debrief of the first demo day, and said, wow, I really have to get better when it comes to, you know, answering questions and the way that I hold myself in certain ways when people are giving me advice or feedback that isn't my own. That right there is a huge emotional intelligence teaching moment and really part of self-efficacy. And to this day, I think would still be able to recall that specific instance with that specific investor and say that they are now a different person that approaches things differently because of that.
No, I think that's a great example.
So there's my short little story in terms of your question, and I'll let Jason actually answer the question.
Since our, since we launched our community platform and programs as well, a handful of the startups coming into our programs, we've already gotten to know pretty well through our free events, webinars, other chats, and just having them in our community space. And, you know, we get a chance to see like who's asking great questions, who's looking for feedback. Not putting anyone on the spot is like, it's a test to come into our accelerator, but it's also like a great way for us to get to know where all the founders in our community are and actively seek out conversations with the ones we think are the best fit for our program, and, you know, have those discussions on if their goals align with the goals we expect them to achieve throughout the program. And, get to have those conversations up front. And also the way we've been approaching this too, is it's not a system where you come in, you're in the program for 4 months and then you go off on your own. There's always a space to come back to. We have an alumni group set up for all the founders we've already worked with that, you know, we're hosting some networking events and providing other resources for those founders as well, and also keeping them involved in our broader community, the events, and just helping any of the startups, whether or not we've worked with them in the past, in any way we can to keep going and keep accelerating their companies.
I mean, because let's face it, in the end, if your business is going to go somewhere, there are going to be instances where people inside your organization disagree with you or each other. Outside your organization, clients, customers, investors, are going to disagree with what it is that you're doing. In the spirit of the name, Prepare for VC, those are all moments you have to prepare for, and for an ability for someone to understand and have what I call situational awareness. You have to know who you're talking to, the perspective that in some ways they're taking on the topic that you are speaking about, and have the ability. And Jason is an excellent example of this. In our meetings, sometimes we all have different opinions, and his leadership and his ability to put the venture before any individual is the thing that keeps us ahead of others that may, you know, spur infighting in their organizations. And what that does is just intrinsically strengthens the cultural dynamic that makes us different. There are a lot of people out there that do a lot of similar stuff that we do. And in some cases, they don't have all of the same pieces, but they may even be on an individual level better than some of the stuff that we do. But the difference is our ability to understand what it means to lead, what it means to understand the situation and what needs to be done, and put the forward progress, our venture forward mentality, as number one priority. And we expect that and want to progress that in any participant that comes through our programs or engages in any of our offerings. Education and experience is the first layer in which Prepare for VC is usually rolled out to the world. So we want to make sure that's world class and it's holistic with an H and a WH, so that it's not just the venture, it's not just the unit economics, it's not just the cap table, it's also you, because on day one, there is only one, and that is the person with the idea, and then it grows from there. So you have to take all of it into account. There's no siloing that can go on for any planned projected success in the future.
Let's talk a little bit about this approach at your accelerator, the mentality of venture forward and focusing on the venture and putting that front and center. You're also obviously spending a lot of time in developing and resourcing and providing expertise, Chris, in terms of the founder and supporting them and the coachability and the emotional intelligence and providing ongoing feedback. So can you just talk about some of the things that venture forward,
yeah, actually,
what does that stand for? Is that a concept that you developed at your platform
2 years ago?
And if it is, what does it represent?
And the idea behind it, it's all stories from founders, how they built up their companies themselves. And the idea behind the book is that there's no like prescription to start a company and, you know, grow your business. It's how can you take what's worked well for other companies and what hasn't worked well to get to that next step in your business, and just be out there looking for, you know, looking for examples, looking for those pieces you can put into your company, but you still have to filter out, you know, filter down all the advice you're getting from a variety of sources and figure out what works best for you and your, you know, your team and your business going forward.
Which I think pairs perfectly with the self-efficacy that must go hand in hand with venturing forward. Because to Jason's point, there are a lot of highlighted, spotlighted, very famous public-facing entrepreneurs that appear like all they're doing is just powering through everything. And it's very easy to get enamored by sleeping 3 hours a day and, you know, working the other 21. That's not sustainable. That's not even scalable. And it's momentary. And that is not the reality of the situation. And so venturing forward is the, from my perspective, the capability to understand and adopt and utilize your strengths through self-efficacy, understanding what challenges you, and then being energetic and charismatic and influential enough to go and find people that directly align or is avidly advocating for the thing that you have for an idea and getting them on board. I've said this really, you know, quite often the past couple of weeks for some reason, maybe it was practice for today, which is your biggest sale in the beginning is to yourself, because you have to sell yourself on why you're going to venture forward and not just stop. It's really easy to stop. And everyone can do that. A lot of people do, because it just can be too much sometimes. Your second biggest sale is to the next person that you bring into the company that you absolutely need to have there because they do something that you just can't. And from there, it's just making sure that your vehicle is in a position to operate and sustain its functionality and get better at it over time by venturing forward, amassing momentum, amassing resources, and then having the situational awareness to know where you're at as opposed to where you thought you would be, being okay with the progress, and then setting goals that are tangible that you can celebrate with yourself and that person or those other people. And next thing you know, if you're doing it correctly and you're going as quickly as possible, there's a whole bunch of people around you that you never would have imagined that are all clapping and celebrating something that started 9-10 years before. And they're like, look at this instant success. And you're like, yeah, instant.
Right. I think that there's a lot of attention paid to the mythical founder story, as I've heard it described in the venture and startup space, you know, the instant overnight success, which is rarely the case. Most of the people that I've had on this show who are doing some kind of venture, you know, building a company, they've been at it for a long time, you know, for years, you know, decades sometimes. And it's often not the more glamorous story to tell and to talk about, you know, what they were doing when it was more obscure and didn't have a lot of traction, didn't have a lot of employees. Let me ask you, from your perspective, you've had three cohorts now, Jason and Chris, at Prepare for VC. What would you say to the founders listening to the show, to the folks that are running a venture fund and they're looking at pitch decks all day long and meeting with, you know, entrepreneurs? What would you say to them are the hallmarks of some of whether they're going to be moonshot billion-dollar unicorn companies, or they're going to have really successful lifestyle businesses, or they're going to have an exit in 5 years to a strategic. But what are some of the characteristics of some of the founders that you see that you're attracted to working with and partnering with?
For all the companies, if you look back
over the cohort.
MailChimp never raised any funding. They got, you know, they bootstrapped and got acquired for $12 billion from Intuit. And then, you know, there's companies that have gone out, raised hundreds of millions of dollars and, you know, either IPO'd, got acquired, or, you know, didn't make it at all and failed. There's companies that, you know, raised small amounts of financing, angel groups, small venture funds, and either, you know, some get acquired, some IPO, some don't make it at all as well. On the success and the goals, like the thing the founders figure out and, you know, has to be developed throughout the program. Some have it going in, some are working on, you know, fine tuning this process. Is what does it ideally look like for them? Is this something, you know, they want to be running 100, 200 person plus company? Is this something they want to build up, you know, a small team that is attractive to an acquirer, they can plug in and somebody else can take it Take it out to the rest of the market there. Is there another pathway that's, better long term to be, an employee and operator of their venture? And how do they build all the pieces in place, talk with the right people, get investors on board that have the same vision as they do? And not everybody is the best. I know we're called Prepare for VC. Not everybody is like their goals align with the best fit for venture capital pathway. Some angel groups and, other programs or even just bootstrapping themselves, can be a good pathway that way. So part of that realization of like what their goals are, what their teammates' goals are, what their investors' goals are, and how they can align everything, it's really important. I think some of the other sides are basically, as we talked about here, being open, actually looking for feedback and advice they can implement in their company throughout, and being able to filter, all the lessons that come in, all the, if we have a demo day or a mentor swarm with different perspectives coming towards them, like being able to take in and accept all that feedback and then decide, which makes sense to implement, which makes sense to test out, and be able to do, some validation of their own to keep growing and moving forward there. Those are some of the highlights for me.
So, sorry to interrupt you. So, would you recommend that founders, begin to find advisors to ask those questions, or is it something that they're going to be able to do, if you will, kind of on the fly when they're in the in the program? Because these are pretty big topics, right? When you're thinking about funding a business and going the venture route versus, going more of the lifestyle, I call it a lifestyle route. I don't know if that's what it's called in the industry, but
So the way I think
about that,
do
you want them to
have
this button down vision idea, and then here's how I want to fund it? I don't know who I'm going to go to, but I know that I want to run, an enterprise scale company one day.
Not full time in the day to day, but they're generally somebody that is dedicating a certain amount of time every month alongside them. Whereas, like, there's different roles for all the people involved. There's your management team, your employees, outside consultants and, project roles. And then there's a difference between mentors and advisors as well. Mentors can be people that are helping you in part of an accelerator program, or people that you've had a relationship with and, you feel comfortable turning to for advice, whereas advisors are typically, somebody that has a somewhat formal role in your company, usually has a small amount of equity in the business as well, and is should be there for, the next, usually there's some vesting involved where they're committed to the next 4+ years of your venture too. We like to help them figure out who the people are, who the people are they need to bring on next. Sometimes it's getting an advisor, from our network or from their network on board. Sometimes it's just getting investors that are pretty active and, to be involved and help them grow their network as an individual angel or other, as a venture fund that can add additional expertise there. And sometimes it's they have a great team in place and just need to get everybody on the same page and doing, managing the tasks, the 500 tasks they're focused on in the right order, so they can hit the milestones in the right order and get to where they want to be by the end of the program.
Yeah. Anything you want to add, Chris?
Yeah. So I think, you know, for me specifically, some of the stuff that I look for and typically has been, even if you look at some of the most successful entrepreneurs that have created entities, is the way in which they speak about their role in the organization and the venture as a whole. So there's a lot of value in the way that people use tenses of words, and a lot of the most successful entrepreneurs have this dichotomy to them. It's a solid foundation of adaptability. So it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, but it's the foundation is this intrinsic compass that points them in a direction of forward. And the adaptability is the ability to pivot, listen, stop, pause, defer to the people that play roles and have critical feedback in outcomes. And I mean, we all judge success in 60-minute segments, really, when it comes down to it. So if I'm talking to someone that's breaking down the success of a business and they're looking at it from that perspective of, you know, that 60-minute segment, how does that translate into them being clear on what is happening, and how does that translate into them being clear on the projection of success into the future? And that could be the hour after the hour you're in, or it could be the decade after the decade you're in. So that's one aspect, the way they talk about it and their team and the inclusivity of that. The second thing is their presence. Someone's presence is this intangible sense that you can get from someone, regardless if it's on video or if it's in person. Obviously, you know, we're interactive by nature, so the closer you can be to someone, you obviously feel a little stronger. But when someone is very internally focused and driven to a destination that you can't see, the ability for them to not only make you feel that, but then to communicate how they go about doing that, and then have the foundational ability to adapt along the way. I bet on that that founder, that visionary, that entrepreneur 10 times out of 10 over someone that is highly technical, has built something, struggles at some points to relate the complexity of that thing and how that makes my life better, as someone that doesn't have that deep technical complexity or the understanding of it. And so, you know, these very base instincts that are then translated into skills that have to be honed, for me, those are the two biggest components. And then it's just, how do you build energy, momentum, or of people around your venture, your future state? How do you get people really excited to come on board and help you build something that doesn't exist, to solve a problem that does? And by the way, we have no money to do it. Are you ready? that's like performing magic. So those pieces to me are extremely important, and sets apart the good from the great to the amazing along the way.
You mentioned a statistic early in our conversation that I want to make sure I got right. So less than 2% of startups will get VC funding, but we also just talked about the fact that there are different models to capitalize and to finance the business. But that's a pretty low percentage, right? When we're just, you know, calling it what it is, if we're just going on the numbers. But you also just articulated some of the things that could be good indicators of potential success and where there could be potential, where there's potential for traction. So here's my last question before we jump. I always have two that I like to ask everybody at the end. But before we get there, I want to ask you, when you're in an incubator, in an accelerator, a program, like Prepare for VC, and you have 16 weeks and you have the resources and the platform and you put structure around it and you provide mentoring and you provide coaching and all this feedback, what are the indicators of success, but what are the things that you can look at if you're in your role, running this, or the founder? Is 16 weeks generally enough time, not to build the next $1 billion startup, but is four months enough time to get a good sense that either there's a pivot that's needed here, or the traction is there, they just need more financing, they need more people to go on this journey with them. What do you look for at the end of that four-month program from your cohorts?
Change the way they present it and express their business. I'd say, as we go through each cohort, what we're seeing is that transformation moment has come a little bit earlier and earlier in the program, where, if it's something you figure out week four, there's a lot more time to, continue to grow and use that in the new direction than if it's something you figure out, with a couple weeks left in the program. So, yeah, we've been seeing those moments happen earlier and earlier where, we're able to help the founders take the new direction and really, go and grow with it.
Yeah. So from my perspective, the reason why I was sort of chuckling to myself as you're asking the question is the biggest indicator from my perspective, our perspective as a team, that the program is set up correctly is when we see either at the very beginning of the program or at some point in the initial stages, the initial 8 weeks or so, we'll say to each other, because we meet after every single session and we talk about what's happened and where we feel everyone is. And we say, if they're able to catch this and identify it and then start to take action on it, we know that this is set up correctly. And the true indicator of success is when they come back the next week and go, I was thinking about this and I think I might have to change or pivot, or I was thinking about this thing that wasn't really sitting well that I've really had as part of the venture from the beginning, and I'm not sure it fits anymore. And we're like, really? Okay. Well, how do you do that? How do you change that? And the reason I think that we almost expect that is because the very beginning of the program, even before the program starts, when we're interviewing, we ask two pretty steep questions. And the first question is, if this was a complete failure, what would happen in the 4 months? And then we follow it up with, so what do you deem success as? And the ability for that first question to sort of go, wow, what would be a complete failure? I guess if I came out of it the exact same way that I went in. And then when they say, we deem success as the ability to get this much funding in this amount of time. And so then we have this huge window of opportunity, and none of it has to do with us. All of it has to do with them and what it is that they are made aware of through their own actions, what they're strong at doing and capable of getting done in that 4 month time frame, and what they quickly realize either has to change or they are not capable of and must be delegated or picked up by a team member that's there or doesn't exist yet and has to be there. But all of that comes from them. That is, you know, where I think the biggest indicator that the program is set up the right way from the investor perspective, because that's what investors want you to do. They don't want to tell you that you have to change something. They just want you to know that because of what it is that you're seeing and feeling and hearing and going, you know what, I had this idea. And then you tell them the idea and they're like, fantastic. I was thinking the same thing. Please go do that. That is success from our perspective and the investor perspective.
Yeah, I can't help but finish and say this, that listening to you, Jason, and Chris talk, the know thyself, you know, cliche, and to thyself be true, because I came into this conversation, and it's just my own growth, just in an hour of listening to you talk, thinking there's a prescription, there's a formula, right? And they're going to tell me what their formula is at Prepare for VC. And what's happened in this 50-minute conversation is you've said the biggest growth is going to be through the individual. We're here to help them uncover and become self-aware and start to learn how to pick up on those critical points in the, you know, 4 months and do some of that stuff in advance, but then, you know, ask these really hard questions. And probably the biggest growth is going to be in that founder and their team if they go through this and they're willing to use your point, Chris, the self-efficacy to take the feedback and then come back and be better founders, better leaders, you know, better entrepreneurs as a result. So hopefully I'll be a better podcast host as a result of this show. I think I will be. It's fantastic stuff. I always like to end the conversation on the same note. One is to ask you both, Jason and Chris, what causes you to be optimistic about your platform or about the founders, about the types of companies that you're seeing and coming across? It's a real softball by design, because as an optimistic person and a person who gets a lot of energy by interviewing founders and leaders and people like yourselves,
I leave these conversations always with something new to ponder, something new to think about. So I always like to ask you, what causes you to be optimistic about what you're doing, what you're executing on? So I'll start with you, Jason. Are also excited about everything we're building and supporting the startups we work with. You know, there's people, sorry, that's my dog. They are. Exactly. And yeah, so I mean, the community we've built now, where whether it's us advising the startups or taking them through our program, or, you know, they have a completely
different
need. There's
dogs that are barking. They're so excited about and optimistic about it. I love it.
We can part of the venture.
Bring on board as a trusted partner and advisor. And there's people that have come in and made our community their own, and like building out, you know, their own spaces and networks, and building this ecosystem we've been developing to help whatever they're passionate about. Some are really passionate about, you know, helping entrepreneurs in general. Some are passionate about helping, you know, specific segments, women entrepreneurs, minority entrepreneurs, certain countries overseas. We've partnered with accelerators and incubators as well, and really providing a space where this can keep growing and supporting, you know, all the founders in our community wherever they are.
Yeah. So my perspective on optimism with what it is that we're building. So for almost ever since time started, finding resources in a way to have success when building something on your own has been disjointed, siloed, and pretty much broken. Sort of like taking a very expensive fine piece of china and dropping it from a 30-story building, and then someone going, okay, now go find all the pieces, put it back together. I want it to look exactly the same as it did when you dropped it, and go. And oh, by the way, do it inside of a year or 18 months. It's all over the place. You don't know what you don't know. You think you know some things, and when you finally realize that that you only knew part of it, things have changed. And what gives me optimism, though that doesn't sound very optimistic in the beginning, what gives me optimism is that there are more and more people every single day, specifically over the past 18 months, that are taking a leap of faith, an investment in themselves to start a business, to create something that doesn't exist yet, to solve a problem that does, and take action on doing it. So that's the first level of my optimism. The second level, when it comes to us, is that we, as a team, as a Prepare VC team, are not trying to solve all those problems. We are not trying to reinvent the wheel over and over and over again to be better than Techstars or Mass Challenge. We're not trying to be the best advisor team or consultant team. Or what we're doing is building one centralized hub for all of those people in all of those places all across the world to come and cultivate a space so that when someone does start a business, they know unequivocally they should start at the Prepare for VC startup oasis, because all of those avenues, all of those pathways, all of those investors, advisors, coaches, product providers, service providers, accelerators, idea validators, all the tools are there. Or the pathway directly to those people in those places are there. Similar to what Google has done for data and information for the world, we want to do and mirror the same for startup founders and all those people that are toying with the idea that I just need to do this, but I don't know where to start, and that's what's stopping me. Well, we're trying to take that off the plate. Now you do know where to start, and you should come check it out, because you may be surprised, not only with what it is that you find out about yourself, but what it is that you're able to do in a very, very short amount of time.
Well, shucks, now we've got to have a second show, because now we need to talk. Now we need to learn about the Startup Oasis. But I will definitely have you guys back on ATL Alts, because I would like to have a second conversation about not only the progress and some of the additional cohorts that will likely, you know, run and hear about some of these exciting companies that are coming out, but also to really drill into that final comment and that point, Chris, because I've been a part of an ecosystem here in Atlanta, not in the venture space, but in the alternative space. And I've always thought, how do you build how do you build the connectivity between all these different alternative asset classes? You know, I'm somebody that's very interested in venture, but I'm also interested in real estate, and I'm also interested in, you know, private equity. And that was why the podcast ATL Alts for me was a platform, and it was a start to try to bring some of that together. Because if you're in the southeast part of the country and you're in Atlanta, where do you go, right? I get so many calls from people who are moving to Atlanta because a spouse took a job, and they get referred to me for whatever reason. And I guess it's just because I'm a friendly person. I'm willing to pick up a phone, or I'm willing to call somebody, which, you know, makes me feel good. But I also want to plug them in immediately. And there should be some kind of Startup Oasis equivalent in the alternative business in the Southeast, so that people can get plugged in quickly and efficiently, right? To your point. So we'll pick that conversation up on the next show. So last question is, you know, always more on the personal side. You got a lot going on. both of you are clearly very busy, author, running businesses, doing consulting, advising all of the startups that are part of Prepare for VC. So whether you have a system and a series of life hacks that you figured out work for you, or you're constantly like me trying to figure out how to balance it all, barking dogs, kids in the background.
Yeah, I think that's a great question.
And whatnot.
Yeah, so for me, it's
so I'll start with really, you, Jason. Like, what's your formula?
Keeping
not for like, success per se, but just the formula that works for you to accomplish your goals and objectives,
and
do so while actually enjoying
any other meetings throughout the day.
And not just
try to stick with
being busy, but just thriving and enjoying it.
You know,
I'm curious to hear from both of you.
Work on more of the other tasks of like catching up on, emails, Slack messages, other channels, social media content, things like that. After the normal hours when it's more of a flexible schedule there. We also use some task management platforms and like Asana. We keep a pretty detailed records of like all the conversations we're having, what our priority lists are over the next, over the next week, the next month, and the next, several months going forward. So we can see, basically our approach is like not, even on the longer term ones, you don't want it to be like something where, it's 3 months from now, so you don't worry about it until 2 months from now. So like you can get 20% of the longer term goals done while you're working on the shorter term, and then move up to 40% while you're working on more shorter term goals and keep it balanced there. No, that's the main approach. And also just like pinging each other, keeping us accountable on like if there's something that's more urgent that needs to go out today versus just with the head down, like focused on other tasks we're working on. Having those team members to figure out where the priorities lie and work together on that's been really helpful.
So for me, I've done ventures by myself, and I've done ventures with teammates. And even in my athletic days, always part of a team. And there is a this intangible thing that allows further and faster to become a reality when you're doing it with like-minded people that complement you very closely. And it's extremely hard because people talk about building a culture. You don't build a culture. A culture is actually created and is an outcome. And the only way to do that is to go through enough really bad relationships, really bad interactions to find the ones that you're synergistically aligned with. And so for me, having the right teammates around me to hear ideas, to create strategies, and to execute, and everyone knowing their job, holding themselves accountable, those are things that people can get really weighed down on. Or if you're by yourself, you have to do all of those things on your own, and that's a lot. That's just really hard. It makes something that's really hard even that much harder. So what I really love about this and what keeps me focused is having team members that I feel are synergistically perfect for what it is that we're building. That's the first thing. And then how I keep myself sort of on the straight and narrow and understanding what my role is and where I can help is taking care of myself, taking care of, time with my family. And, you know, coming from an athletic background and performance coaching, I do all kinds of weird stuff to get myself ready for the day, from different breathing techniques to freezing cold showers or ice baths, to yoga, to meditation, to you name it. I have a set schedule, like Jason, of the stuff I do in the morning, stuff I do in the middle of the day, stuff I do at the end of the day. And then all the work that we do is all spread throughout that, with family time mixed in. And so I'm glad I learned to juggle back in my teens, because I'd be really bad at this now if I hadn't learned that skill in the first place, because it literally is that. And then maintaining that based on what you're producing. If you find you take it on too much, productivity goes down, you're not getting the right outcomes, you have to change something. That's the way I look at it. If it's working out great, don't change anything, no matter what anyone says. That's just sort of the way I do it. Doesn't mean it's right, but means it's right for me, I guess.
Everybody has a formula, whether their formula, you know, is going to lead to a different outcome, or their formula they want to lead to the same outcome, you know, time and time again. There's a lot of key takeaways in what the two of you had to say there at the end. So we could definitely continue this conversation for several hours, which is always a good sign that you're, I think you're all engaged. And more importantly is, I think you're hopefully bringing forth some thoughts and perspectives and opinions that will hopefully resonate with others out in the world, which is the whole idea behind, you know, doing ATL Alts. I appreciate Jason, you and Chris sharing the backstory behind the platform,
the
and
here.
You know, more importantly, just being so open to exploring.
Same here. Thanks.
What you're trying to build with Prepare for VC and the Startup Oasis, which I'm definitely keen to dig into on a future show. So with that, Jason Kraus, founder and CEO, and Christopher Duby, Chief Strategy Officer, both from Prepare for VC. Thank you so much today for joining me on ATL Alts.
Pleasure. Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much. We'll look forward to talking soon.
Also, bye.